And by the way, while we're talking about people's, you know, sexual behaviors, can we have maybe a grand jury impaneled for Bill Clinton getting on Jeffrey Epstein's plane and going down? Because I guess former presidents are now, you know, completely fair game.
It's also one side of the aisle, right? This is the...
Well, it was both sides on the...
Well, no. Trump never went to the island. That is not true. Trump and Epstein hated each other. There's a lot of misinformation. Netflix did a lot of damage here. Trump kicked Epstein out of the club. He never went to the island. There's no evidence he ever engaged in the Epstein's nonsense. In fact, he kicked Epstein out because he was preying on young women. Bill Clinton did go to the island. Dershowitz went to the island. And maybe some other people. That's what we know of. But Trump never went to the island.
It's so funny that this whole thing takes place and nobody is willing to open it up and go deeper to see what really happened there. You know, what was who do we have on a couple months ago who talked about the Epstein Island? Rob, who do we have on?
What was her name? She was Whitney Webb. Yeah.
Which, by the way, she did a phenomenal job, and she can't
People
even live in the States. Yeah,
episode.
They loved what she had to say. What's the likelihood that we'll ever in our lifetime learn about what happened on Epstein Island and, you know, any of the guys that will be held accountable for it?
What's the number below zero?
You really think it's not going to happen at all?
Oh, yeah. I mean, so my hypothesis on Epstein, he was an intelligence asset either for the American government or for the Israelis. He had a Potemkin village of an investment facade. Anyone that met him, there's a very powerful YouTube video. Eric Weinstein talks about this in detail. So this is not my theory. He talks about it. He says, when I sat down with Jeffrey Epstein, and it makes sense because he had the most expensive real estate and he wasn't that sophisticated in how he talked about investments. And there were not a lot of recorded trades on the addresses he disclosed for his financial activity. And he only had one investor. And it's all very strange, right? But it makes sense that if you were trying to run an intelligence operation, either for the Saudis or for the Israelis or for the American government, that you would try to get the most powerful people in compromising situations with underage girls, capture it on film, and then be able to use it and blackmail. So I don't know all the details, but you're dealing with something that's deeper than just kind of a high society pimp.
Well, that's essentially what Whitney Webb did point out. It wasn't even necessarily Epstein. It was his right-hand woman, Ghislaine Maxwell, that her father was undoubtedly some sort of asset from Mossad.
And he owned newspapers in the
UK. He was a powerhouse. Rupert Murdoch and him went at it.
Robert Maxwell,
Murdoch,
I think his name
was. Yeah, that's exactly his name, Robert Maxwell, yes.
So you're saying less than 0%, right?
The fact that we find out what actually happened on the island, it's not going to happen.
Who would lead that charge, though? You know, you see a January 6th committee or a 9/11 committee.
No,
but
I mean, that
only who's
one
advocating
person,
for that?
Only one person could
who,
pull
Trump?
It off. No. It's like a, what do you call these, WikiLeaks guy?
Julian Assange.
Yeah. It's got to be some Snowden. It's got to be somebody like that. And you got to be living in a different place to pull it off and hack into it and gather the community, because they have communicated. So there's some way somebody
Bill Gates went to the island too. That's right. Bill Gates went to the island. I'm sorry, I forgot.
But obviously, Bill Gates went to fix the Microsoft Outlook email for Epstein because he was having problems.
And it wasn't just the island. It was this massive ranch in New Mexico too, right? Huge ranch that underage girls were trafficked to. And remember, this wasn't just American government officials. Prince Harry, right? Is that it? No, not Harry. Not Prince Harry. William. Edward.
Prince Edward.
Randy Andy.
Yeah.
Prince Andrew.
Andrew.
As they call him in the tabs.
I get them all, not Harry.
Randy
Andy. I get them all messed up.
No, Harry is.
Yeah, Harry's
a whole
different
thing.
He's in Santa Barbara. Yeah, Prince Andrew was also part of Epstein's orbit. So.
Did you see, just to bring up Harry, if you want to recognize them, their nonprofit, they had to prove how many hours a week they contributed to the nonprofit. You know how many hours they had to prove? Did you see it? 1 hour a week.
Nice. That's hard work.
$11 million, I believe, they've raised. $13 million they've raised. They've given $3 million, and they contribute an hour a week to their charity. That's some hardworking people right there.
Let me just
around.
Say one final thing on the Epstein thing. I don't mean to belabor the point, but when I first started to go to Palm Beach, and I visited Palm Beach 10 years ago, I started to hear kind of one-off comments about, oh, yeah, that house right there, that's Jeffrey Epstein, and he's trafficking young girls. People knew in the area. And then I
You're
started,
19 at the time.
I was 19, 20 years old. Okay. Yeah.
They would just casually point this out?
No,
just
it was
as a matter of fact?
Because remember, Epstein was indicted like 15 years prior for similar activities. So it was kind of out there, right?
Yeah.
I think it was Acosta, actually, that was the U.S. attorney general. Ended up being one of Trump's cabinet officials that was the U.S. attorney. I could be wrong about that. But there was some connective tissue there. And anyway, no one really took it seriously. And then I remember it was either Rogan or somebody in 14 or 15 before all this started to talk about Epstein's Island. And you were smeared as a conspiracy theorist. If you would have said in 15 in public decent society that there was a targeted campaign with former presidents and the world's richest man, who Bill Gates was at the time, to go to a remote island in the Caribbean to go be able to have sexual relationships with underage girls, you would have been laughed out of the room. Now we know that's a fact. Why do I say that? Be careful what you call a conspiracy theory. It's a thought-terminating cliche that actually might lead you to something true.
By the way, Rob, I'm going to send this to you. I love what you just said. I'm going to send this to you. Can you pull this up from APA News? Because a lot of times you hear things like this, and you're like, well, you know, there are a lot of conspiracy theorists out there, and you're seeing right now a lot of conspiracy theorists saying, you know, we're undefeated, all these things came true, you know, we were right.
That came up with it.
Exactly. But look at the article. It's not written by Breitbart. If you open this up and you go to it, conspiracy theory, okay, coined long before JFK assassination, go lower to take a look at the article. Okay, claim the terms conspiracy theories were created by CIA agency following APS assessment. False recorded use of the phrase conspiracy theory dates back to 1863, and it was notably invoked reports following the 1881 shooting, then President James Garfield, more than 60 years before the CIA was established. An academic review of the Digital Library found the term conspiracy theorist has been published at least in the last. What do you say to someone like this where they're quick to jump on it to say CIA didn't come up with the conspiracy theory?
You mean that
theory?
They're calling it a conspiracy theory?
Yes.
That conspiracy theory came from the CIA?
Yes.
Go read the Church and Pike documents. The Church and Pike Committee was the most effective House and Senate oversight of the U.S. intelligence agencies. They received death threats. They were followed and intimidated. They came up with it. So it's not like we pulled it out of thin air. The Church and Pike Committee discovered not just the heart attack gun, which is a real thing, by the way. They discovered a gun that they could shoot somebody and make it look like they had a heart attack, fake an autopsy. But they discovered that the Central Intelligence Agency, via Operation Mockingbird, a real thing, used the term conspiracy theory and got it into public opinion as a way to try to discredit dissident opinion. It's in the Church and Pike documents, so people can read it for themselves. The Church and Pike Committee was, what year did it, was it 70-something? Yeah, if I'm not mistaken, 76, right? Yeah, I mean, it's all there. There are thousands of pages of documents that most Americans aren't even aware of. You'll learn more about your government. I can never pronounce it right. COINTELPRO, Operation Mockingbird. There's five or six of these projects that the intelligence agencies are running that the Pike Committee uncovered.
In your opinion, all this conspiracy theory stuff, what turned out to be the biggest non-conspiracy theory?
Epstein's up there.
And what do you think is actually a conspiracy theory that Americans like, hey, sorry to break it to you.
Lie versus truth is a better. Yeah, I hear what you're saying.
Go ahead.
Well, I mean, there's several. I mean, one of the ones we lived under in the last couple of years was that somehow closing schools and getting kids away from each other is somehow going to stop the spread of the virus. And if you push back against it, you're anti-science and you're believing in conspiracy theories, right? That's a really big one. How about that the vaccine is safe and effective and going to stop transmission? I mean, they said
mom got diagnosed with COVID today. She had every booster on the planet.
Yeah. So, I mean, that was
today.
I'm like, how are you feeling, mom? Theory. COVID out of nowhere.
I think there's a lot to the JFK assassination. I personally believe there was more than one shooter. I think there's a lot of evidence to support that. We don't know that for a fact because they keep on suppressing the release of those documents. I think that this idea that somehow we got off a metallic-based currency just for good and noble reasons, I think, is insane. Just read The Creature of Jekyll Island, which is, I think, one of the most illuminating books on currency.
Pat took his whole team to Jekyll Island at one point. Did you know?
Yeah, we had in the room where they came up with the whole thing, we had a meeting there. Yeah.
So anyway, I could go on and on. Yeah. But no, I mean, there's several of them. How about this? When we used to say that there weren't weapons of mass destruction in Iraq, we were all called conspiracy theorists. Turns out there weren't. They found some biological and chemical agents, but nothing near what they told us it was, right? Which was kind of the core centerpiece of, I think, the illegal mistake to invade Iraq, one of the worst mistakes in American doctrine. History.
Yep. So what's on the flip side?
What do you mean?
Meaning, like, what actually probably is a conspiracy theory?
Oh, man, you got.
Did
get,
we land on the moon? Is the Earth round?
We do have a spherical round Earth. Yes, that is correct. You could prove it.
Yeah.
And you could prove it mathematically. You could prove it flying in a plane. You could prove it when you see a boat that all of a sudden just disappears on the horizon. That's how you know you live on a spherical round Earth.
No, those are the dragons over the edge.
Yeah, that's right.
That's why we have to carve the goddess in the front of our boat to protect us.
Bob, how about the moon? How about the moon landing? You think we landed on the moon?
Yeah, I do. I think we landed on the moon. And the reason being is that, look, it's I don't have any. I'm going to get so much hate mail for this, and that's fine. But generally, that one seemed too big to cover up. That there would take too many people and too many actors and too many fake stories. And I think there was a really good Mythbusters that actually went against the kind of flag waving part of it. Again, I don't.
What about 9/11?
I do not think it was an inside job. I think our government probably had aforementioned notice. Yeah, I think our government probably knew that 9/11 was going to happen. That they had ignored intelligence reports. There's too much to suggest that we allowed the hijackers into our country. And we did nothing to stop it.
So you do think it was an inside job?
That's not an inside job necessarily. Oh, okay. An inside job would say that the government was actively planning explosives and wanted it to happen. I think that there was probably a turn of the head on, for whatever reason, you could figure it out, and we probably will one day, of some sort of domestic attack that the Islamic fundamentalists were plotting or planning. But I think it goes too far to say that our government was planning explosives in the World Trade Center. I don't see any evidence of it.
I want to read a couple other stories here. So
sure. We can keep going into my opinions.
crisis. Like, you know, we talked earlier about what's going to happen, what needs to happen for America to be united. We talked about different crises. This is one of the ones that, you know, a lot of people are calling me about and asking me, what do you think about what's going to happen here? And it's coming up a lot lately. China and Brazil strike deal to ditch the U.S. dollar. This is a zero hedge story. And, you know, they have reached a deal to trade in their own currencies, bypassing the U.S. dollar. This deal will allow the two countries to conduct their massive trade, which amounts to $150 billion per year, and financial transactions directly exchanging yuan for riyals, vice versa. This deal is part of Beijing's latest move against the U.S. dollar, extending its bilateral U.S. dollar attempting currency arrangement beyond countries such as Russia, Pakistan, Saudi Arabia, to now include Latin American exporting powerhouse. While we are still strong, long away from the yuan replacing the U.S. dollar as a global reserve currency, the current U.S. ruling regime is destroying the world's faith and confidence, not only in the dollar, but in what was once a superpower in and is increasingly a third world banana republic. Tom.
So I think what most people need to understand, and this is where I think Americans need to step back off headlines and just learn something very, very quickly. And that is 1944, there was something called Bretton Woods. And that's where the U.S. dollar was tied to gold. In other words, the value of the U.S. dollar was connected to the value of gold. And between Fort Knox and other areas, we had gold reserves. So the U.S. currency on a global scale was deemed as being valuable, tied to gold, and stable. And in 1944, everyone came to this agreement to say, hey, let's peg the value of our currency to the dollar, because the dollar is pegged to gold, and it brought international global stability. It also created the dollar as the world's reserve currency. Well, what does that mean? That means if you have extra reserves and you bought them in dollars, they were stable because they were tied to the gold. Now, Nixon, and we can talk about what you just referenced a minute ago, was Nixon taking us off the gold standard 72-73, which had nothing to do with the Vietnam War and political instability and the economy at that time.
I agree.
It was deeper. Yeah. I'm with you. Yeah. It was deeper reasons. That was the front excuse. Right now, you know what the average is right now on world reserves? 62% of countries' reserves are held in U.S. dollars. 62% right now. And so even though we went off the gold standard, we're the reserve currency. So people see the United States currency as very stable. That's what's important. And what we're seeing here is the yuan. Everybody here is the yuan. Well, that's a unit of measure. The actual currency in China is called the renminbi. That's their dollar. Dollar equals renminbi. Yuan is like a unit. And so what they want is they want to slowly, remember, China plays a long game. They want to slowly replace the dollar as the world's reserve currency. Because,
will they succeed?
Huh?
Will they succeed?
Well, they're taking one step at a time, and they're starting with African nations that they put into, by the way, you can also go study mercantilism, where you come in and you take all the resources and then you sell.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Back things that are made out of the resources. So China is in an active state right now of assisting many small regional Latin American and African nations on deals that are intentionally going to go bad and then leave them with the collateralization of the country they've just pillaged. And so long term, if somebody doesn't stand up long term, sure, China could be successful because they're playing this not the way the West plays it. The West has played the game in terms of history, in terms of regimes, a regime of leadership. China is playing this long-term in terms of decades.
Dynasties.
So, Tom, Charlie, what are you thinking?
Oh, sorry.
Yeah, I don't mean to interrupt. I agree. I think the dollar, it's gonna hit a flat line because Germany, South Korea, and Japan are not going to drop the dollar as the world reserve currency. And especially Germany and Japan, they produce a lot of value and a lot of wealth. And so the euro backstopping the world reserve currency, meaning the dollar being the backstop of the euro, is actually in our benefit. But India is going to be the big question, right? If India falls, mm-hmm. that's a growing market.
Yep.
Brazil is a totally corrupt country. They're a broken country. The bulls on Brazil have been wrong the last 20 years. It's like $1 trillion GDP. You could fact check me on it. They're mainly a natural resource hub, and they have a real hard time with their own homegrown industry, and there was like $1.6 trillion, I was about right. It's actually flatlined and gone down in recent years. So the bulls on Brazil have been wrong, and with Lula now becoming president, they're gonna become a wholly owned colony of the Chinese Communist Party. Basically, that's what Brazil—
catastrophic for the nation,
it's terrible.
The way. Yeah.
The future of Brazil is put in permanent jeopardy because of Bolsonaro staying as president, prime minister.
And everybody thought BRIC through the 90s was just an acronym for emerging nations.
Yes.
You know, Brazil, Russia, India, China. It wasn't. It was a coalition over there that wanted to undermine U.S. authority on a global trade basis.
So we need a new president, because I don't think Joe Biden seems awfully worried that the dollar is no longer becoming the world reserve currency. You can say that it wasn't a good idea for us to become the world reserve currency. However, it's a fact that if we stop being the world reserve currency, every single person in America gets significantly poor overnight. The fact that people have to turn their goods and services into dollars is kind of a stimulus boost just baked into our economy. We're a place of last resort, a refuge, if you will. It's a built-in advantage that we don't even recognize or realize till we travel the world. But I think we have more staying power than people realize. There's a lot of entrepreneurs. We create a lot of value in this country as some very valuable companies. Despite the fact that we're service-based, we still have a lot of natural resources. We have a manufacturing beast that can still be unleashed if necessary. So we have a lot of advantages. With that being said, though, this current administration seems unbothered by any of this. And, I mean, what we need is a new regime. You're right, we do think in time, you know, terms of regime. Hopefully it's President Trump, and we go directly after the CCP. But a lot of this is centered on a border dispute on eastern Ukraine. All of this is, if that was not happening the way it was happening, a lot of these chips would not be falling into place, in my opinion. That is the beginning domino, because then Russia said, okay, screw you, we're going to go grow closer to China. You know, we're no longer, for the first time ever, Russia has just dropped basically all their dollars out of the central bank because we made them when we put sanctions on them. By the way, what does that say for world reserve currency status? This is why our leaders are so stupid. We basically confiscated the dollars out of the Russian central bank. That's not exactly safe and secure. Basically, countries are saying, wait a second, you can just confiscate our dollars? Like, we went after them and just grabbed the dollars and said, yep, they're no longer valid, you know, converted into ruples. And Russia said, okay, well, that's an act of war, which it is. And so I think a lot of this is centered on this eastern, you know, border right. dispute. We could talk about that if you'd like. I think it's incredibly important. I don't think people have really thought through the ramifications mm-hmm. of our involvement in Ukraine.
Xi comes over and says, hey, I have a plan B for you in this currency thing. Tell you what, let's take something really valuable. I've got it. Energy.
Yeah, that's
I
right.
need energy, and energy has a hard unit of value coming out of the ground, just like gold does. And so what Xi did is he got value in the form of resources for the renminbi in a deal that looks like a trade deal, but it's a currency deal with Russia.
That's right. Yeah, it's bad all across the board. But make no mistake, with the proper president, the right president, we can crack that alliance in 9 months. These countries, China has a lot of domestic
problems.
What
would Trump do? You're saying that. So Trump gets a, let's just say it's 2024, okay. He wins. What's he doing?
Well, first, he could go back to what we already had, which is you have a peace immediately brokered in eastern Ukraine, immediately. You go in there and you end this stupid war, you end this proxy war. You then try to create intentional separation between Russia and China and keep them in their own corners. You go to the Saudis and you say, knock it off. You're going to keep on using the dollar for the petrodollar. You save OPEC, which will increase the dollar strength as a world reserve currency. And then you have to go after the CCP in like a 15-point targeted plan. You pull their visas from being able to go to Europe. You put targeted sanctions on them. There's again, I'm not exactly saying anything that hasn't been thought through really serious scholars, but we have to have a serious plan to punish the CCP for what they did with the virus, covering it up and lying about it. And then also their hyper-aggressive action with Belt and Road, cyber warfare, infiltrating the American economy. Some of that comes with a price and a cost. But then more than anything else, Trump, if he becomes president again, will be energy independent again. There'll be economic confidence restored. I think that we'll see inflation put under control because we'll actually have a rebirth of market stability. Right now, people are confused. They're uncertain. They're afraid of their own shadow. Everyone's looking at what the central bank is doing. Entrepreneurs can't operate in an environment like this. And that's why you're seeing business startups go down. You're seeing acquisitions slow down. Whether we're in a recession or not, I think we are in a recession. It really is an indictment of the lack of confidence coming from the current regime. We don't know if a big tax bill is going to be passed. We don't know if the regulators are going to be thrown at us. We need President Trump to do what he did for 4 years, which is to unshackle the American economy.
Can I ask you a follow-up question on this?
Don't leave out Taiwan. Is that the question between China and Taiwan is market share of semiconductors. This got nothing to do with righting or wrong of Chiang Kai-shek.
Yeah, that's correct. That's why we should build as many domestic semiconductor plants
as
possible.
This is not lost on Donald J. Trump. And Taiwan will not happen that. Taiwan won't happen that way.
The Isla de
Hermosa, and they know it.
The old Portuguese name for it. Yeah.
Yeah, my question to Charlie is this. I'm glad you brought up the acronym BRIC, which I think has now been updated to BRICS because Brazil, Russia, India, China, and now South Africa is now the latest component of that.
The mighty power of South Africa.
The mighty power of South Africa. All facetiousness right there.
I don't mean to make fun of South Africa. It's not exactly a world power.
Hey, Elon Musk is going to be very upset when he hears you commenting on his native country.
I think he would agree.
It's an African American valuable lump of natural resources.
Here's my question. I don't think there was anything like... China was going to do this regardless. We know that they've been trying to come after the American superpower, and that's just what's on their agenda, China 2030. Russia was never going to cozy up to America. They're always going to be aligned with China in some regard. My question is India. I don't think China and India are aligned whatsoever.
They're not natural partners.
So they're not natural partners whatsoever.
They hate each other, actually.
Exactly. So what's their role in this? Because I always thought that they... as the most populated democracy in the world outside of America, where is India's role in that? Not that you're this India Pacific expert, but
no, I mean,
you seem to have a very good grasp
things.
On what's
Look,
going on.
I mean, India's a tricky country. You can't trust their government. They're doing deals with Iran and they're doing all sorts of weird stuff for energy. But India should be the most natural partner and hedge. You could squeeze China through a bilateral agreement with Korea, Japan, and India. And that's why America needs to be actively involved in the room and calling balls and strikes, using sanctions and tariffs where necessary, and using the global reserve currency status to be able to effectuate meaningful geopolitical change, which we do not have right now. I disagree a little bit. I think Russia's run by a bunch of thugs and mobsters. I think Russia wants whatever is best for Russia. I don't think necessarily Russia and China are these natural partners. I think we made it that way. I think what Donald Trump was trying to do was he was trying to keep Russia in some sort of a kind of ambiguous middle neutral area phase and then jab at China. Remember, Trump put sanctions on China. He, you know, improved a lot of diplomats to be expelled from China. He was putting a lot of different he was trying to kind of create some form of a jab against the CCP. The problem right now is the CCP is able to run undeterred right now. There is no counterbalance from America. So, I mean, look, for example, if we had an actual regime that cared about saving America, like, okay, China, you're going down to Brazil to go do a new deal, 15% export now tariff immediately on pick your product. Just make them feel it a little bit of, you know, make them think twice. So there's no cost to it. And look, China has a lot of domestic problems. They have hundreds of millions of people living in legitimate third world poverty. Despite the appearance that Xi Jinping puts on like he's the most popular leader ever, there's legitimate dissent against the CCP. The CCP is run by a group of mobsters and thugs with no more than 5% of the popular support. Mm-hmm. And so they got their own ticking time bomb. They have ghost cities. They manipulate their currency. They have bank runs that happen far too often. They suppress a lot of the news there. They're not a free society. They think they can kind of do this Marxist Orwellian digital surveillance state. I actually think that's unsustainable. I think it's going to break eventually. I could be wrong. And so China likes to posture as this really strong man. We could destabilize the Chinese Communist Party in 9 months with a proper president. The question is, do we want to? The only question then is, why don't we? It's because they've captured our elites. And they call it elite capture in actually Mandarin. They have purchased the head of the NBA. They purchased the Wall Street. They purchased, you know, the top people. Peter Schweitzer put this in his book, Red Handed, where he talks about how the American elites are bought and paid for by the CCP. There's a great expression in Mandarin, and it's roughly translated, little bad talk, big help, which means they might talk a bad game against China, but they're a big act of help. Mm-hmm. You look at the cover, he has Elon Musk on there, which I think is a little unfair, but he has Joe Biden, John Boehner, Nancy Pelosi, LeBron James, I think that's Henry Kissinger, and then Bill Gates, all of which who benefit tremendously from the Chinese Communist Party.
And then you see what happens when, like, a famous American actor like John Cena steps out of line.
Yep, immediately put back into place.
Yeah. Mandarin.
Or the NBA was regulating who could wear things in the stands of free Hong Kong protester shirts. Remember that? It's kind of a story that was suppressed a couple years ago.
Yeah, with Daryl Morey.
You know, yep, you were not allowed to even go into a National Basketball Association game with free Hong Kong T-shirts. So it's a hyper... I mean, you think about it, it's... These associations, Hollywood especially, Hollywood, banking, and sports are the three major industries that are controlled by the Chinese Communist Party.
Hollywood, banking, sports.
There's more than that. Tech, too, but not even as much as Hollywood, banking, and sports.
The fact that we're being apologetic to them, like, hey, we're so sorry, what can we do to make you happy? And you can easily, America helped China become who they are today with the relationships over the years.
Yeah, I mean, I don't mean to interject, but without us giving them favored nation status, without the 1999 World Trade Organization Treaty, they are a third world country,
Yeah. Period.
And we basically said, okay, we're going to redomicile our manufacturing assets. We're going to close down our ability to make stuff, and we're going to do this massive labor arbitrage where we're going to send all the jobs to you, and we get a bunch of plastic we do not need in return. And the robber barons that made those deals, and I don't say that lightly because I'm a capitalist, but it was bad for the West, designed this entire thing. But when you have a relaxed monetary currency, which we do, it necessitates neoliberalism.
Who were the architects of that deal in 1999?
Well, Bill Clinton signed it, but it was largely driven by consultants. McKinsey & Company was the largest company that was basically pushing, the kind of idea that we're going to go to a company and say we'll be able to solve... You see right there, McKinsey and Company, right there. It what was that, 2019? Yeah. And we're going to go in. We'll save you, you know, pennies on a dollar. You know, you could make this trinket in China for this. Even this tie right here is made in China. I was, like, wearing it earlier. Are you kidding me? Why can't we make this here? It's because, you know, we want to try to get the lowest cost. And for certain products, it made sense. But why do we make penicillin and vitamin C? 90% of all our vitamin C comes from China. Like, that makes no sense. And so we offshored our critical infrastructure to a country that seemed to be kind of a passive country, and it's now turned into our greatest enemy.
And what have we gained from that? Just lower prices when you go to Walmart?
I'll tell you what we've gained. Our homes are twice as big as they were in the 1950s, with twice as much garbage that we do not use, and they're half filled. They're twice as empty because we have less kids. So we have piles of plastic we do not use and factories that are empty. And then, in return, We fill our entire communities with fentanyl made by the Chinese Communist Party, pumped through by the Sinaloa drug cartel, and we lose 107,000 people a year to drug overdoses.
And we'll take it another step closer to home, and I'm teaching people new words today, Pat. Maquiladora. Maquiladora means little sister. Maquiladora was the concept of putting a small factory in Mexico where the labor was cheaper and products could be made, and then they would take a very short walk to the United States.
Yep.
So if that WTO deal doesn't happen in favor of China, it would have turned Mexico into the larger manufacturing power.
That's exactly
and
right.
What would have happened to the Mexican economy? You would have had the eruption, the good eruption of the middle class in Mexico.
That's such a good
and
point.
You can trace it exactly right back to the issues that we have with Mexico, to the gang style violence that there are in terms of controlling government areas in Mexico. Whereas if this happened, you would have turned them into 1950s United States manufacturing power. And what would have that done to our relationship with Mexico to the south?
It would have made our continent a superpower continent, is what it would have done.
Why did we have the foresight to do something like that?
Because you could make it for cheaper. They were chasing the labor costs.
Slave
He's absolutely correct.
Labor. And I hate to be that blunt, but the Chinese Communist Party basically said pennies per wage hour for us to be able to make a shoe. And they were chasing the wage hour. And look, I'm a capitalist. I'm a free market guy. But also, I want markets to point towards something virtuous and good. And not every deal you do is going to always be in that proper context. The Chinese Communist Party deal is a bad deal. And the people that defend it, it's indefensible. I mean, what we have as a casualty is we have become more in like an owned and operated colony of the CCP. It's breakable. It's breakable for many reasons because we still have a free society and they don't. The fact we have somewhat of a free society is our great competitive advantage. That right there is how we beat them. If you unshackle the American entrepreneur, we run circles around these people because you cannot possibly quantify or measure 20 or 30 million free people taking risks. That will beat a CCP oligarch every day. That's a planned economy. Now, they have a mixed economy, but they still are not figuring out entrepreneurship there because they have to control. They have to confiscate wealth.
It's still fear-based.
It's still
freedom-based.
A true free society economically could destroy these guys in a decade.
And what you don't realize is you're seeing a reflection of 1950s and 60s Soviet Union, where they tried to put in place these five-year economic plans centered around crop plans and agriculture. And we're going to export to Europe, and that's where we're going to get our power out of it. And they had a couple things. They had uranium. They had limited LNC because of the extraction that they were doing at that time. Blah, 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 blah. Well, guess what? That is exactly what you're seeing happen here, is these limited economic plans that are based on control of the populace, the labor force, are not working for China just the same way they didn't work for the Soviet Union.
Can I ask you a question, Pat? Yeah. Because I know this is something that's near and dear in your heart. Obviously, you know, entrepreneurship, capitalism is the backbone of what Valuetainment is all about. You've interviewed, whether it's General Robert Spalding, countless people that what's the one gentleman that you've had multiple times? He's an expert in China relations.
Gordon Chen.
Gordon Chen, yeah. Correct.
He's excellent.
So when you say that China is fear-based, and Charlie corrected out that you have 20, 30 million entrepreneurs here in America that can spur American exceptionalism again.
It's a great economic
hub. When you say fear-based with China versus...
I'll give you a perfect idea. Yeah. So if I go to TSA Pre to get my TSA Pre card, you're in fear because you're dealing with a government organization. Customer service is non-existent. The lady's talking to me as if I work for her. I told you to be here 15 minutes ago. I'm like, you got to be kidding me. I'm driving up. Are you serious? She's like, yes, I told you. I'm like, wow. Then go to Clear. You go to Clear. You know how they'll talk to you? Oh, my God, thank you so much for coming. And thank you for this and thank you for that. Rob, if we can grab a bottle of water. So Clear will give you customer service because they want your business. TSA Pre knows you don't have a choice. You best respect us, right? Fear, free. TSA fear, clear, free. America is free. Still, China is fear. You're afraid walking around. You got to make that guy happy, this guy happy, that guy happy, this guy happy. It's all about that. This is why by the way, earlier question I asked of you guys, and I asked Charlie. Kelly, you can just bring it up. Earlier question I asked of Charlie, I said, what would happen...
Thank you.
To America today, if Elon doesn't buy Twitter, if Spotify doesn't drop, if Spotify drops Rogan, let's say, and a Rumble isn't there, what would happen? entrepreneurs are going to fix 95% of the world's problems. Because in climates like this, you don't think YouTube in their board meetings, they're talking about Rumble right now? What do you think they're talking about? You don't think Facebook and YouTube and all those guys are sitting there pissed off at Elon for allowing freedom of speech? You don't think you don't think YouTube and all the Silicon Valley people are not pissed off at Sweden, Daniel, for not dropping Rogan? How dare you not drop Rogan? How dare you not drop Rogan? Capitalist expose bad arguments, and that's what's happening right now. I want to transition into a couple other things as a parent of 7 months.
Yes.
7 months, which is exciting.
Life-changing.
Your eyes, man, tell a story right now. I remember having our first.
Yeah.
As parents, you know, you think about these things now, where before when you were single, you're like, maybe it's not as big of a deal. Biden says transgender people shape our nation's soul. I've never heard this before. An official proclamation, okay? President Biden's issued an official proclamation declaring March 31st as the Transgender Day of Visibility, stating that transgender Americans shape our nation's soul and contribute to society in various fields, including the military, medicine, politics, and business. He also expressed concern over discriminatory state laws targeting transgender youth and the epidemic of violence against transgender women and girls, particularly women and girls of color. Anyways, he keeps going on, and you see what, you know, Jean-Pierre was talking about. And then I saw a clip. I want to play this clip for you if you can. Rob, if you can play that clip off of Twitter, and I want to get your reaction. This kid is 11 years old. I'm sure you've seen this. He gets up there speaking to the board, then his father speaks afterwards. Can you play this clip real quick, Rob?
Hi, my name's Knox Zajac. I'm 11 years old, and I go to Windham Middle School. I'm a sixth grader. I was in the library, and this book was on a stand. I'd like to read you a page. My back over my hips as I ask if we should take our clothes off. And he's saying yes before I finish my sentence. He's pulling off my T-shirt, laughing when I can't undo his shirt buttons. He's undoing my belt. I'm reaching into his bedside
press
drawer
pause.
For a condom.
I think you got another video playing in the background, Rob. Yeah, you got some kind of another clip playing in the background.
He's got a lot of tabs open.
Yeah, you got one other clip, that because that music doesn't match it.
It's kind of strange.
Yeah, very strange. Yeah, exactly. In a exactly the same way you're thinking about it, I'm thinking about it.
I was like, that doesn't fit.
No. Okay, go back to it and play it.
AI could replace.
No, you still got another clip playing, Rob.
I'm happy to comment on it.
Yeah, go ahead. Comment on him until he finds the video.
Yeah, look, this is happening in school districts across the country. Basically, the kid goes on to read an incredibly graphic and pornographic piece of literature that is presented prominently in a middle school library. And
he said it was like the first book when he walked in, which is insane.
It's outright grooming.
And his father comes up afterwards.
His father was upset.
I do not mean to make this political because it should not be political. Mm-hmm. But I will make it political because Ron DeSantis, to his great credit, said that has no place in schools. And they called him a book banner. The Democrat Party says that's okay. And that needs to really set into people. Again, I hope it's not political. I don't think most Democrats even support that crap. But as a political issue, they went after Ron DeSantis for trying to say this has no place in our schools. And you read this, you listen to this graphic telling, and by the way, that's one of thousands of examples that we have found. There is a targeted campaign that is reflected in some pieces of legislation now in California to say that it's okay to rob a child of their innocence. It's not a big deal. In fact, it's a good thing.
See, the problem, Rob, do you have it now? Or if you can play it, I want to see him reading this, the reaction. Go to 10 seconds into it. There you go. Press play without the...
Skater.
Yeah.
I was in the library, and this book was on a stand. I'd like to read you a page. My back over my hips as I ask if we should take our clothes off. And he's saying yes before I finish my sentence. He's pulling off my T-shirt, laughing when I can't undo his shirt buttons. He's undoing my belt. I'm reaching into his bedside drawer for a condom. We're kissing. Again, we're rolling over. Obviously, you can see where this is going. I don't know if it's because we're feeling especially emotional or just tired. Or these past couple of weeks have been too much. But this reminds me so much of the first time we had sex. We were both fucking terrified. And the whole thing was kind of terrible because we didn't know what we were doing.
Look at the mom's.
But it was good too, so good, because we were a mess of emotions, and we were scared and excited, and everything felt new. So this sort of thing, this sort of feels like that. Nick touches me like he's scared that any minute. Now, this book was at my middle school, and it was on a stand. When I rented it out to show my dad it, the librarian asked if I wanted more and if I wanted a graphic novel version.
Graphic novel version.
Here, the but, father's but I, now, I believe, right?
That's a comic book. You,
but
of
I,
course.
I'm only boy. Shocked people are surprised. This is everywhere.
That kid's father.
Okay, good. I was asking for you.
Yeah, I'll take another 3 minutes. So that's my son.
Okay.
11 years old, and went to his library and found that by the entry door of our library, this is the smut that he is finding, all right? I don't care whether it's gay, straight, bisexual, whatever the terms are for all this stuff, doesn't need to be at our school. Doesn't need to be at my 11-year-old's library. And then as far as genderqueer, I've got a son in the high school as well, and this is bullshit. We know it, all right? We do not need to be having literature that's showing boys how to suck dick, all right? This is, I'm very, very frustrated about it, okay? And you may think that schools know the best for our children. You know who know the best for our children? The parents.
This is not an isolated example. There's thousands and thousands.
No,
of
no doubt about it. This is why gays against groomers are doing what they're doing.
Good
and they're
them.
Grown. We had them on 2 weeks ago.
Good
yeah.
For them.
So, but for me, you know how historically there are some arguments that Republicans lost, where they lost 92% of the black vote when they lost at Barry Goldwater. You look at how some arguments where, you know, you lost the Hispanic vote because, hey, they're for this. This is the kind of thing that could dramatically turn parents against the Democratic vote. Because say somebody that just votes just to vote, and they don't think about all the details that's going on, but they say, wait a minute, I'm voting for this, and that's what the Democrats support. I just don't support that. So they may go independent. They may go, I know earlier today you were saying Joe Manchin was on a show where they were asking him,
yeah,
saying, hey, are you, is there any chance that
Chuck
you could
Todd,
run? And
yeah.
He said, hey, you may run as an independent.
Yeah.
There's going to be opportunities to look elsewhere because the Democratic Party argument today is losing a lot of logical arguments for parents.
I completely agree.
I think it's an opportunity for the other side to make the presentation to connect with the parents. A couple other stories before we wrap up. I want to talk about this wonderful capitalist. I don't know if you've ever heard of him. He's one of the best capitalists out there who is becoming a little bit more proud and proud to talk about it. His name is Bernie Sanders, if you've
oh, yeah?
heard this guy
That's
before.
Right. Why doesn't he give his book away for free?
Yeah, he's got a net worth somewhere between $5 to $8 million. He was upset when he was called out on it earlier. I want you to play the clip first, Rob, of what happened with him and Mark Wayne Mullen, when they're going back and forth. Just play the first, if you can, I don't know if you have the clip. It's the Forbes clip. I sent it to you. It's on YouTube. It's a YouTube link I sent you. If you go on YouTube and you type in Bernie Sanders and you type in his name, Mark Wayne Mullen, you'll see it. And it's, go to the second one, the 7-minute one. Yeah, obviously we're not going to watch the whole thing, but I want you to start it off. So first of all, they cut off Howard Schultz, the founder of Starbucks. He lets him finish his thought. He finishes the story, then he comes back. And go about 20 seconds into it and press play, and then we want to see the last minute.
As you might imagine,
go a little bit further until he
stops
talking.
We're very curious to understand what happened in Buffalo.
Right there.
You're anti-union as a CEO. You're anti-union busting, or you're for union busting. I'm not saying you're anti-union. I'm just saying that it seems like to me, as a former CEO, not nearly at the success that you were at, sir, and I'm not trying to defend your company because, quite frankly, politically, we're on totally different ends of the spectrum. And so the irony of this hearing is actually kind of
funny. This guy's worth around $70
million. And I do want to point out some hypocrisy about this hearing with the chairman.
Watch
and
this.
It's not trying to get personal. All this information is going to be very public. But the fact that you can't defend your company because you want to have a good relationship with your employees and you believe in employee value, which we all do. Any CEO knows that the success of our companies are based on our employees. We get that. But it seems like unions today, all they want to do is fight with their employees or their employer, the same employer that is hiring those team members. And that friction causes a very volatile and tough workplace. And if the company and the employees aren't in the same boat, rolling in the same direction,
keep going 10 seconds. And they can't, says Bernie is worth to 8 million. Keep going.
And unions
just,
themselves,
just test the 10 seconds, 10 seconds, 10 seconds, 10 seconds out of park.
Executive. Yeah. But I take offense to the chairman pointing out all CEOs are corrupt because they're millionaires. You know, if you make a lot of money, you're corrupt. It's bothering to me because, Mr. Chairman, you yourself have been very successful. Rightfully so. Glad you have been. You've been in office for 28 years, and you and your wife have amassed a wealth of over $8 million. And in fact, your quote on being wealthy and being a millionaire was, well, if you write a bestseller, you can be a millionaire too. If you can be a millionaire, why can't Mr. Schultz and other CEOs be millionaires and be honest too? If that's the case, then why is it that Mr. Schultz, who actually creates jobs and a bestseller of a book, isn't creating any jobs? Why is it that he's corrupt and you're not?
He straight up went at him.
Why is it that all CEOs are corrupt because they're wealthy, and yet our chairman, who is wealthy, and I'm glad you are, you're not?
So fast forward now when they have their back and forth and he's trying to defend it, says this is the most ridiculous thing I've ever seen.
To be successful,
there you go, right there. Go ahead.
Thank you. Well, let me respond. The senator did mention my name, I think. And I think you got an all-time record here. You've made more misstatements in a shorter period of time than I have ever heard.
Please correct
me. Well, if I'm worth $8 million, excuse me.
It's all public.
Excuse me.
Yeah, go ahead.
All right? Excuse me.
Yes, sir.
If I'm worth $8 million, that's good news to me. I'm not aware of it. That's a lie. All right? Number two.
Heard of public records.
You're probably looking at some phony right-wing internet stuff. It ain't true. No. All right, you should read beyond that. It is not true.
It's part of public records.
It is not public record.
Okay. Well, you made $1.7 million on your
public
book.
Public record.
You made $1.7 on your book.
Excuse me. I've got the mic now. Number
Did
two,
you make the statement
I have
that if you
the mic
be a
now.
Okay, you can pause it here. I'll get some comment, and then I'm going to show a one-minute clip, and then we'll wrap it up. Go ahead. When you see something like this with Bernie going after guys like Howard Schultz, who's created 402,000
yes.
jobs, What do you think about this exchange?
Well, I'm an entrepreneur. You're an entrepreneur. Creating value is hard, and it takes risk. And you need capital, and you need labor. You need a balance between the two. But you have no value created unless you have an individual with a drive and the ambition to work the extra nights, wake up the early mornings, and assume all of the responsibility. You see, all Bernie looks at is the advantage. But he does not realize that at any time when he was CEO of Starbucks, while he was the sole owner, he could have been open to lawsuits. He could have been open to, mass client walkouts. And if it goes bankrupt, who's the one that then has to go to bankruptcy court? Are the employees then going to bankruptcy court? No, they go find another job. No, but when you're an entrepreneur, you're not saying, okay, I want the upside, but I want the downside. And guess what? Most of businesses in America go to the downside direction. They do not succeed. That doesn't mean they go bankrupt, but they shutter, they fold, or they get bought, or they just kind of taper out. And so it's very easy to criticize Howard Schultz. And I have a lot of problems with Starbucks as a company politically, but that is an unbelievably hard business to scale. I can't think of maybe your business, Patrick, might be harder. But it's pretty impressive. But I got to be honest.
Selling insurance is harder than coffee.
But think about it. It's labor intensive.
Yeah.
He turned a commodity into something that was special. So coffee was never something that was, considered to be an experience or worth paying up for. So he upsold something that was just so widespread that people would have in their homes. And you have to hire hundreds of thousands of people. The turnover is immense. You got to train them. You have to have the rent. And you got to scale it against also once you create the genre of coffee service, immediately you have 1,000 competitors, right? Dunkin' Donuts changed their model, Krispy Kreme's, and he still stayed excellent. And so
McDonald's built cafes.
Yes, that's right. And he still pummeled them. And he still did a good job. And their coffee's not even that good at Starbucks. And he kept on doing it. And I don't think it's very good compared to most other. But I think it's admirable the way Howard Schultz defended himself because he said, look, I earned that money. And that's my one of my favorite words in the English language is earn.
That's right. And they he tried to cut him off, by the way.
That's right. And Bernie Sanders has not earned anything.
Yeah.
Now, he might have some book deals or whatever, but Bernie Sanders has never, because he's a bum. He was a bum mayor of Burlington. He was a bum failed congressman, and he's a bum senator. He's never created any value in his life where he's had to say, you know what? I'm going to take risk. I'm going to assume responsibility to create voluntary value where someone's going to want to transact with me. And so Bernie Sanders enjoys being rich. He does not know what it takes to get there. But it's really the core element of the socialist worldview, resentment.
I want to show this. So for the longest time, and I love that, by the way, for the longest time, he would always criticize millionaires, millionaires and billionaires, millionaires and billionaires, millionaires and billionaires. There's this one-minute clip that was done by Think Progress. They're no longer around. It was done. It was ran by a guy named Judd, I want to say, and you know, they were more on the Hillary Clinton side. So they did not like a socialist getting the momentum that we're getting.
For American progress.
So he made this video, this one-minute video on Twitter, if you can go to it, with the timeline. It's not this one, Rob, if you can find it. He made this one-minute video. It's just go to my Twitter. Go back to my Twitter account. And you should find it, Rob, if you, again, this is one I text you as well. Right there, right there. If you can zoom out on that one. Now watch this. When you zoom out, okay, play it from the beginning. Just watch when he stops saying millionaires.
So if I'm a millionaire.
What, millionaires and billionaires?
For billionaires and millionaires.
For millionaires and billionaires.
So good.
See this, when he gets the books.
A proliferation of millionaires and billionaires.
Now watch
when millionaires and billionaires of millionaires and billionaires.
Day to the left.
Millionaires and billionaires. Millionaires and billionaires.
This video is made by a Democrat.
Millionaires. Millionaires and billionaires.
Millionaires and billionaires. Millionaires and billionaires.
Boom. Now he's a millionaire. 2016.
This is a budget of the billionaire class, by the billionaire class, and for the billionaire class.
But
more
enough about
billionaires
me.
In his administration. Billionaires.
Billionaires and the wealthiest people.
Billionaires and the wealthy.
A handful of billionaires.
And other billionaires.
It's billionaires.
Allow billionaires.
Multi-millionaires and billionaires.
Of multi-millionaires and billionaires.
If you are a billionaire not or just in the top 1%, we will be an administration for the working families of this country and not for billionaire campaign contributors.
The day he becomes a billionaire, it'll be called the trillionaires. I mean, that's his formula right there on what he does. Charlie, you see something like that, what do you think about?
I got a lot of work to do because he influences a lot of young people. And it's very easy to be generous of other people's money. Value is hard to come by. A free society allows people to use their reason and their agency and their abilities to create something ex nihilo, out of nothing. And we live in the wealthiest, most prosperous society ever for a reason. And he's trying to stop that. His ideas are directly against what has made the society so wealthy and prosperous, and which really is that entrepreneurial underbelly. But
what's Charlie's long-term vision to wrap up?
It's, for me?
Does Charlie Kirk have any vision of one day being a president?
I don't know. No. But I get asked all the time, Charlie, are you going to run for office, all this? I love what I get to do. I do 3 hours of radio every day. We're one of the most successful podcasts out there. Please subscribe, everybody. If you can, you can take out your Apple Podcasts and subscribe.
Put the link below, Rob,
so
we can make sure they can see it.
That would bless me. Thank you.
Is it Turning Point USA or
is
it Charlie
separate,
Kirk?
And I'll get to that. Yeah, so I love what I love to educate. I love to learn. I love to read all weekend and then try to distill those ideas in ways that people can understand. That's where I'm my most passionate. And then we have Turning Point USA, which is our movement of hundreds of thousands, soon to be millions of people that believe in freedom, fighting for it. And so I'd rather be a movement leader and a thought leader than just a politician. That's where I find myself to have the biggest impact and the most joy.
But we don't know, right? And you got to keep a little bit open. You don't know what's going to happen.
Well, first of all, I'm 29 years old, so I can't legally run for the presidency.
Six more years.
I don't want to be president.
Not a long time.
I think it would be a crummy job. I have a lot of work to do, okay?
It'd be a crummy job?
Think about it. I mean, it depends under the circumstances, but you got nonstop pressure. You got the deep state coming
you
after
like
all
it,
the time.
Though. You like it, though. You like a fight. I mean,
I love the fight.
That's
that
the
true.
Job of a fighter,
I'm not
going
to run for president. Yeah, I'm not doing that.
The good thing is, today, they came out with somebody did research the other day saying the average person, there's going to be people born today that are going to live up to 140 years. So, essentially, we have 111 more years to go.
It's like in the days of Noah, literally. In the scriptures, they say you're going to be living in the days of Noah. Now I know we're living in the days of Noah.
His sons were 100 when they went on
that
right.
Show. That's exactly
but
right.
I'll say one thing to you. I've seen a ton of your clips online. I completely appreciate how you walk into enemy territory and hold people accountable. And a lot of times their arguments are
silly.
Just emotional. And you have logic and facts on your side, so that's respect. What campuses can we see you on coming up? I think you're a very necessary voice, especially where we see the direction that Gen Z is going. What's that looking like in the future?
Yeah, so we just finished our campus tour. I did my mostly peaceful campus visit at University of California, Davis, where they sent Antifa and they came with weapons and made big news. Elon Musk commented on it. It was all over the place. But we just finished our campus tour. We have some big events coming up. They can go to tpusa.com. Start a high school or a college chapter with Turning Point USA. That is our movement. It's the crux of everything I do and we do. The field program is the largest ever pro-freedom field program in the history of the country. And we have people that disagree with us. In fact, if you look at our campus events, where I'm really proud of this. Anytime I speak anywhere, I have anyone who disagrees go to the front of the line. And in fact, I tell the crowd not to boo them or heckle them. I love the fight. I love dialogue. In fact, I think that's what makes us human. Dialogue literally means through reason, through the logos. I think when we stop talking, we go into a totalitarian, you know, dystopia. And I think we have to have more difficult conversations, lean into the topics that are considered to be politically incorrect or third rail. And it makes life fun and interesting and worth living.
Well, Charlie, it's been great having you on. Like Adam said, we agree you're a very, very necessary voice.
Thank you.
And you're going to be a force to be reckoned with for decades to come, whether it's in office or doing what you're doing or something new. Who knows what's going to happen, but we're looking forward to it either way.
Thank you.
Appreciate you for coming on. Gang, if you're watching this, make sure to go click on a link below, subscribe to his podcast, follow him with all the links that we have below. Take care, everybody. Bye-bye.